Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Sideshow Garden Podcast.
It's another Friday afternoon and you are tuned to another episode of the Sideshow. On today's show is a very special guest. In 2012, there was an article written in the Telegraph by none other than Tim Richardson. Tim noted a list of 30 of Britain's most influential gardeners. Gardeners, we say? Well, let's run with that. And he says of this lady, "A Gardens Illustrated remains Britain's most influential garden publication in terms of the formation of taste in planting and design, a mantle formerly held by Country Life. Over the past 7 years, editor Juliette Roberts, on the phone line waiting for me now, has steered the magazine through turbulent periods, including several changes in ownership. As of last year, the magazine is no longer part of the BBC, and also relocation from London to Bristol. Despite this, circulation has risen and the magazine has not dumbed down by decreasing coverage of, for example, foreign gardens." Now, when you take into consideration that Juliette is one step behind Carol Klein, she's also on the same list as former guest of the show Mark Diacono, Christine Walken et al., and Monty Don. Juliette Roberts, you are very welcome to the Sideshow. Quite an acclaim, that, Juliette.
Thank you. No, I was thrilled. I was thrilled when Tim wrote that. But it's very much due to the magazine's reputation, I believe. We're seen as the sort of style bible in the world of horticulture, kind of internationally, really. And we sell all around the world. And I'm in a very privileged position to be at the helm of the magazine.
How did you end up there, Juliette? And also, whilst I have you on the phone, for friends across in the United States and also in Ireland who wouldn't be aware maybe of Gardens Illustrated, what is the magazine and what is your job there? How did you get there?
My background is journalism. So for many years, I worked in film journalism. I worked at the British Film Institute. I worked on the Radio Times film pages. And but gradually, I'm still very interested in film, but gradually my interest in gardening increased. And it sounds rather cheesy to say, but Gardens Illustrated was my favourite magazine. I'd always been a bit of a magazine junkie, but I really love Gardens Illustrated. And when a job came up on it, I took the chance and kind of moved from working in the film industry to working in the gardening. And I have to say, I've not regretted it for a second. I absolutely love the gardening world. It's a very special world, and the people in it tend to be extraordinary and lovely. So yeah, I'm very privileged to do that. So as editor of the magazine, I sort of guide the content and sort of build contacts with people all around the world. The magazine covers, as it says, Gardens Illustrated. The photography is outstanding. We use the best garden photographers in the world. So it's very image-driven. We look at the best gardens around the world. We also look at the best designers, what plants they're using. One of my kind of guiding principles with the magazine is I kind of have this little mantra of pleasure and purpose. So I want the magazine to look really beautiful. And some people may mistake it just for simply a coffee table magazine, because it is... it has got that look to it, look and feel to it. It's very sumptuously photographed and beautifully designed. But if you read it, the content absolutely delivers all the time. And so I feel that that's the purpose. I want to give people tangible information to take away, be it about plants, design, places they can visit, all sorts. So, yeah, I have to say it's endlessly fascinating.
Two things now, because I did find that Gardens Illustrated, the magazine itself, was formerly based in London. You've moved down to Sarah Venn country, down to Bristol.
Yes, we did. It was launched by John Brown Publishing. And one of the facts that I find really hilarious is that when John Brown launched his two magazines that he launched, this is back about 22 years ago, he launched Gardens Illustrated and he launched Viz magazine, which I thought was quite an incongruous mix. But I think it says much about the man that he had the vision to publish great magazines, whatever their content. After, I think it was could be about 8 or 9 years, we were sold to the BBC and we became part of the BBC gardening portfolio alongside Gardeners World magazine. And there was a magazine at the time called Easy Gardening, and they also had, like, in this, which was reflected in the cookery titles, they had Olive, good food and easy cook. So I think that this was their approach. And then after we were there for about 4 years, they decided to relocate a lot of their specialist titles to a company in Bristol. So that's when I moved. I was actually working on the magazine, and then I relocated with the magazine. It's 12 years ago now. People were kind of saying, "Oh, can you run a magazine out of London?" And of course you can. Most of your work is done on the telephone and the internet these days, and emails. So it was absolutely fine. Worked really well, and we had a whole new team there, and we had a lot more focus on the magazine and put a whole new energy into it. I had to build up a new team from scratch. It worked. It worked really, really well. And the magazine has gone from strength to strength. And I think we've got our highest ever subscription rate. And we're all really pleased the way it worked out.
What about yourself, Juliet? I mean, the ultimate question is, were you always into gardens? And did that leave you when you went into the film industry, which is, let's be quite frank about it, it can be a bit like myself and my working day. It can be extremely long hours, and then all of a sudden it snows for 3 days. It's kind of not far off the film industry to go from there to, let's say, what you are doing now. How did that all work out for you?
Well, my parents, I mean, you kind of usually hear you do become your parents eventually. I think we all recognize that. My parents are very keen gardeners. My grandparents, both sets of grandparents, are very keen gardeners. So gardening's always been in my family. When I was in my early 20s, I moved to London, and I didn't have a garden. I lived in a small flat. It wasn't until I was in my late 20s that I bought a house with a small garden, and I suddenly got, I just wanted to have a nice space to sit outside. I was fortunate that my two best girlfriends were mad keen gardeners and had been since their teenage years, so which was quite unusual. So they kind of held my hand. They later thought it was hilarious that I became editor of Gardens Illustrated because they'd seen me really as a very novice gardener, and I immersed myself in it. And so when I got the job on Gardens Illustrated, I was thrilled because I was just, you can just absorb so much. You sort of live, eat and breathe it 24/7, which was just exactly what I wanted. But in terms of moving from the film industry to Gardens Illustrated, in many ways, I think there's a lot of similarities. It's about creating an environment, a sort of experience, an immersive experience. And I think films do that. Really good films, you kind of, you can escape yourself and lose yourself in a film. And I think that the same goes with the very best gardens. You sort of, they're sort of very sensory experiences, and obviously, hopefully moves to a happier and higher level. So I can see a lot of similarities between the two. I know they on the surface they seem quite different, but I can see that there's a huge amount of similarities too.
As regards your working day, if I can call it that, Juliet.
Yes.
You seem to wear a lot of many different hats, or shall I phrase that, at Gardens Illustrated, which you, I gather, at the helm. Do I call you the top don there, or you're the editor?
I'm the editor, yes.
You're the boss, but I know that you've got the Gardens Illustrated Festival is on the horizon.
Yes, we do, yes. I think increasingly magazines are moving into other areas and providing extra things for their readership. And we've long done reader days where we have a special day at a special garden and we put on a talk and lovely lunch. And we decided to extend it into a festival. One of the things about Gardens Illustrated is I'm in touch with all the leading garden designers and garden makers and nursery people in the country and actually know many overseas too. So we just thought it would be a really lovely thing to kind of pull that together and have a series of talks, and also have a marquee where we could sell plants and some of our favourite garden products, and just make it a really special day. One of the things I was very keen on is that it's a kind of meeting of minds. So we've deliberately kept the price ticket quite low, and we want everybody there, from the leading garden designers to home amateur gardeners to nursery people to national plant collection holders. Across the board, there's a huge amount of people involved in gardening, professionally and from a professional level to an amateur level. And I thought it'd be a really special thing to have everybody all together in one place. And I can't think of another event that actually does that. I mean, there's some fantastic shows out there. But I think to have an event where everybody from across all the industry can come together and meet and become friends and exchange their thoughts and ideas and inspiration would be a really good thing to offer.
Well, let's go to ticket prices then while I have you on it. How much are they? When does the festival take place? And again, for those who maybe have never been there before, I mean, we'd be vaguely aware, or I would be better maybe aware of the RHS style of shows.
Yeah.
How does the Cardin's Illustrated Festival differ? Not so much in the, let's say, the team or I have, sorry, Juliet, every time I say theme, I say team as in 33 and a third, and you say theme.
Theme.
And I get quite conscious of that when I'm saying it and hearing it back in my own head. But how?
Yeah, don't worry.
No, I won't, not at all. How do you differ in that? And you say that, like, that friendlier kind of meet and greet. I know we've had Noel Kingsbury on the show, and you're probably good, very good friends with him. He's also one of your speakers.
Let's start from the beginning. The event takes place on the weekend of the 25th and the 26th of March, which happens to be Mother's Day weekend. It's at Weston Burt School near Tetbury in the Cotswolds, which is a beautiful location, and the school is very lovely and has great facilities there. It's a beautiful country house, it's wonderful gardens, so not only can we use the lecture theatres inside the school, but we've also got the grounds, and we're going to put up a beautiful vintage marquee where we will sell plants and products. So how does it differ from an RHS event? I think the RHS events are fantastic. I think this is on a different scale. It's much smaller. A lot of the RHS events are by the nature of it, very big. So ours is more compact. And I think instead of, we don't have any show gardens, and it's really the main part of it is the lectures. So we have 2 days of lecture events. I think it's the lectures, and then there's the marquee that's additional to that.
Okay, so for those of you listening at home, just to give you a gist of who is in there, on the speakers list, former guest of the show, Noel Kingsbury, Anne-Marie Powell, also former guest of the show, is in there, our very own Helen Dillon from Dublin, who I had the pleasure to speak alongside some time ago at Christchurch Cathedral in Dublin, and that is a talk you literally do not want to miss.
Yeah, absolutely.
And in between all of that, of course, you'll have Juliet there as well. Is it a case of that you have to book a ticket to a separate speaker? Is it a one ticket in for the entire show?
No, it's separate. It's to make it accessible. We thought people can pick a mix, and if people just want to have one ticket, that's fine. The tickets are £14.50. So you can book a whole program of events, or you can just dip into what you would like to go to. And I think that was the point of making it accessible. The vintage style shopping marquee is absolutely free. So once people are into the event, they can go and wander and see everything and meet people, and obviously lovely food and tea and cakes. But the lecture program, I mean, we're really, really thrilled. My dog. Okay.
That's okay. I have a dog here as well. Most of these Sideshow listeners would know this.
Yeah, he's invariably looking out the garden window and watching the cats go past, which starts him off.
Right, yeah, good dog.
Yeah, so we're thrilled with the lineup. So we have all the wonderful people you've just mentioned. We've also got some of the leading garden designers, so from Cleve West, Tom Stewart Smith, Nigel Dunnett, Arnie Maynard, all people who've top of their game have been at the Chelsea Flower Show, but also people who are absolutely brilliant but maybe lesser known, like Marina Christopher, who runs a nursery called Phoenix Perennials, who's one of the nurserymen's nurserymen, as it were. James Alexander Sinclair, who's always fun. Ginny Blom, Isabel and Julian Bannerman, Sarah Raven. Oh, the list goes on. And Tim Richardson also, kind of garden critic and garden historian. We've got, we were kind of doing it piecemeal. I was like, you know, some people weren't available. And then when I actually saw the whole list together, I was really absolutely thrilled. We have got people who are, it's going to be fascinating, and all different sorts of talks from, we have a cut flower grower who does English grown cut flowers called Charlie Ryrie. She's doing a talk on the accidental flower grower. Nigel Dunnett, who's involved with the Olympic site, is doing a talk on layers of colour, creating beautiful long season planting. Alice Fowler's talking about pools, ponds and water gardens of the canalways of Birmingham. It's really eclectic. So I'm hoping that there'll be lots of thought-provoking and inspirational talks, as well as lots of practical ideas to take away. And the most important thing is that you're going to have fun. It's going to be an entertaining day out with your friends and family. And as it's Mother's Day weekend, you know, we just thought it'd be a really lovely thing to treat your mum to, attend lectures and have a glass of champagne, go shopping, have tea and cake. I mean, what's not to like?
Champagne, tea and cake. You're about two steps away from the promised land and the place where I would just love to live for the rest of my life. We are at that level. My advice to you listening at home is pretty much this. Go and listen to the interview with Noel or Anne-Marie. Take a browse through the speakers list. Anything you need, don't write any of this down. I know you're listening to this on the way to work or on the way home. It's gardenfestival.com is their website, or just Google Gardens Illustrated Festival. It will literally all come up for you. And if you're stuck for any of that, at Sodshow on Twitter, facebook.com/TheSodshow, and we'll put you directly in touch with Juliet and the team at Gardens Illustrated. But my advice would be, pay that ticket in, and a bit like you might do at a Glastonbury or an Electric Picnic music festival, you kind of pick the names out that you maybe want to see. And in that music department analogy, the one thing I will tell you, having done, let's say, a Hampton Court or a Chelsea Flower show, is yeah, there is the Main Avenue Chelsea kind of thing, or to put it in, I don't want to misquote Juliet, but there are the better known names. But the way I've always done it is to pick, let's say, two from the top. It's almost like consonant, please, Carol. Two from the top, one from the bottom, and then you kind of work it out that way. And that kind of gives you a greater, maybe a slightly different, you pick up on that new, different thing that you never thought you'd expect to see. Is that, for those who've never been there before, Juliet, is that a better way to go?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that's a really good piece of advice, because there are some really great, you know, very well-known names here, but everybody we've chosen has got something to offer. And there are the unsung heroes of the gardening world, and who I'm aware of, that I want to promote because I think they're absolutely brilliant. So, no, I think that's really, really good advice. One thing I should also mention that I'd completely forgotten is that we are also offering a free plant and design clinic, which are kind of 15 minutes appointments that you can book in advance or on the day with plant and design experts, and, you know, bring the problems of your garden or plants that you can't grow, and we can put you in touch with and have a kind of one-on-one conversation with some of the leading practical gardeners in the country, and also some really good garden designers. One thing I should also say as well is that the tickets are for sale on the website, and I think some of them will sell out, so just be mindful of that. But you can also buy tickets on the day, but obviously just to make sure you get the seat in the right place, I'd recommend buying in advance. But there will be other there will be tickets for sale on the day too.
I should also note for you listening at home, if you think it's going to be a little bit gardens and a little bit horticulture and something that may not appeal to you younger folk out there, or at least younger of the mind, James Alexander Sinclair's talk is called Sex, Death and Gardens. I never thought I'd see those four words, three mainly, all in the one sentence. And if I gave a talk entitled as such, I would probably be heckled from afar. But James has quite an eloquent way of putting those words together. He's a good character, isn't he, Juliet?
He's hilarious, James. He's very, very good fun. But he's also a very good designer and a very good plantsman. But all of his talks are highly entertaining. Now, I kind of thought, what's he doing now? But that's very James. It's absolutely guaranteed to be a fun talk with James.
He's not as good looking as me. And for those of you wondering at home, I didn't say that. It's actually quoted in last month's Gardens Illustrated magazine. And also, if you're wondering why I am not on that list of speakers, well, Juliet had been talking to my agent. They're trying to agree on fees, and essentially I was a little bit, I don't know, too expensive. We're working on it. We'll see how that goes. Juliet, bring me back to yourself. I mean, was it a case of that when you were growing up, and you're not the first person to say this to me, that the gardening thing started maybe when you were, you know, a lot younger, and then it kind of morphed into, well, life kind of comes on, and the gardening, I guess at the time, might have been seen as a little bit of a hobby, but also a job, as discussed with Mark Diacono, something that he didn't really evolve into as a career. Did you do that thing when you were young? I mean, how far into it did you get before it left you and then came back again?
I mean, I enjoyed being in the garden, and my parents would always encourage us to kind of do tasks around the garden. But I like pottering around, but I wouldn't say I was really bitten by the gardening bug until I had my own space. And then I kind of threw myself in. But I can definitely, I think it's children being aware that their parents enjoy that space, and it kind of rubs off on you whether you kind of know or not, you know, whether you're conscious of that or not. So, you know, it does all make sense. And I think when you see your parents and your grandparents getting a huge amount of pleasure from spending time in the garden and gardening and the plants. I mean, I'd always loved plants. So I'd always have, even I'd have house plants and things. But yeah, I didn't really get into it properly until I kind of had my own plot, as it were. And then I actually took on an allotment in London. And I think I learned a huge amount from that as well. And that was enormous fun because I like cooking and I like eating well. So growing your own is also a big part of my kind of gardening career, as it were.
You wrote a book, am I correct in saying that? The Organic Kitchen Garden?
I did.
Yeah, how did that
yes,
go?
Yes, I did. It was great. It was really good fun. I mean, I wrote it as a sort of novice gardener, kind of learning from my mentor. And I was writing a series at the moment based on an organic garden, vegetable garden up at Audley End that was run at the time by a head gardener called Mike Thurlow. He ran the organic vegetable plot. And I was doing a series with Mike, and I was loving it because I was reading a lot, I was learning a lot, but I was kind of asking the questions that kind of novice gardeners do, and I wanted to sort of relay that to an audience. So I couldn't have done that without Mike. He's absolutely fantastic. He's very much my mentor. But I did a huge amount of research. I spoke to a lot of people, and I wanted to kind of convey that for beginner gardeners that you can, you know, how you can grow organically.
Do you find, and I say this semi in jest, but also quite serious, Juliet, that, I mean, how do I phrase this? You're talking to a guy who went to West Cork to, I guess, look at gardens. I ended up spending or extending my holidays there by about 4 days to look at, you'll never guess what, more gardens. And then when I came home, I went back down camping at the end of September in beautiful Irish weather to West Cork to go look at, you'll never guess what, the same gardens that I'd already looked at 3-4 times that year. Do the people in your life turn around and say, like, oh, for God's sake, Juliet's out of it, get why? We went, do you know, we went to buy a pair of shoes. Guess where we ended up? A garden.
At a garden or a garden centre.
And there's also a double-edged sword in that where it kind of maybe sometimes, I won't say it gets in your nerves, but equally you get like an equivalent of writer's block the odd time, and really all you want to do is pull the curtains. Do those elements kind of identify with you? Do you have them? Do they get critiqued by your best friends and family because of those?
I think I'm fortunate that a lot of my close friends and families are also massively into gardening, so I don't get that. My son, when he was a teenager, used to get really bored. He'd just go, all you do is talk about plants, and we go on kind of country walks, which he liked, but we'd be stopping every 5 minutes looking at the plant life. So I think I'm fortunate that a lot of people do enjoy the same subjects. I mean, maybe that's the friends that I've chosen, or they've chosen me. But I've also got many other interests as well. It's just, I think I always come back to plants and gardening, and that's kind of, and just the kind of the beauty of the natural environment. I mean, I kind of ties into going on, there's a wonderful walk that I do near Bristol that's a sort of an old drover's way that's just thick with snowdrops. And it's just a kind of natural phenomenon, I assume, but it's just kind of quite wild and tangled. But it's just such a special thing to go there every year, and so I do love the natural environment as well. And but yeah, I'm just completely smitten by plants.
The ultimate question, though, Juliet, has to be, I mean, you know, I get this every, inverted commas, gardener or horticulturist I know gets this, but possibly you more so than anybody. I mean, when your own garden to use a how do I say an informal way, is in a state of chassis. And the neighbours turn around and go, oh, that's Juliet's garden. Oh my God, do you know what she does for a living? Do you know she's? Do they speak ill of you down at the local church fete? Does that happen to you? Do you get embarrassed by that?
Well, I try to keep it quiet in the neighbourhood, to be honest, because one of the downsides of working in publishing is that you work really long hours and you work hard. I mean, it is a fantastic world to work in, but you don't spend as much time in the garden as you would like to. And each year I kind of promise myself I will. And we bought a house a few, I don't know, 5 years ago, and the garden was in a bit of a state, but also the house is in a bit of a state, so we sorted the house out. It's a classic story. Sorted the house out, and we're kind of gradually working on the garden. But I've got a really good vegetable plot. I'm really proud of that. That's good. But the perennial garden, which is nearer the house, still needs quite a lot of work. Although I have to say, looking out the window this morning, all the snowdrops are coming up. I do love collecting different snowdrops. And they're looking absolutely beautiful.
I'll take it at this stage of the game that the vegetable plot is therefore better than, how do I call it, the more amenity, inverted commas.
Ornamental,
side of horticulture of your garden.
Yeah.
Is that a Bristol thing? Because talking to Sarah Venn and listening to the people who know the edible Bristol thing that's going on, is that a big influence on you? Has that waved on you, let's say, from when you maybe left London?
To an extent, but I think because I'd had an allotment in London, that was a big part of my learning curve with gardening. And I love growing my own vegetables and salad crops and herbs. So the thing is that with vegetable gardens, what's so fantastic is they're pretty much annual. So you can kind of clear it, plant it, and you get something great come up that year. And then I haven't put in that many perennial crops in my vegetable garden yet. So I kind of put it to bed at the end of the year, kind of, you know, put lots of compost on, tidy it all up, and then it's all set to go in spring. I've got a few crops left in there, such as put garlic in and some Cavallonero kale and some other bits and bobs. But you know, it's the most spick and span out of all the areas of the garden. Let's put it like that.
What's a day off, or what's a non-gardening day? The windows are closed. You can be anywhere in the world, Juliet. Where are you?
Oh, well, I love walking, so I like being out and about. I do like kind of country rambles, ending up in a pub for a Sunday lunch. Something like that would be good. But I still like watching films and listening to music and reading. Yeah, there's never enough hours in the day, but yeah, given half a chance, being out in the garden is my favourite place to be.
Well, what can I say? It has been an absolute pleasure. For those of you who are interested, the Gardens Illustrated magazine, if you go on right now, gardensillustrated.com, or just at Sideshow on Twitter, and I will send you on a link to it. If you go there and subscribe, you will save 50% on that. The festival, should you be going there, fingers crossed, I will be there myself, is the 25th and the 26th of March 2017. Hold on. Dog. Stop. I have a dog as well. 25th and the 26th of March 2017. It's taking place at Weston Brit School in Tetbury. If you go to gardenfestival.com, don't worry about any of this if you are on your travels. Like I said, at Sideshow on Twitter, facebook.com/TheSideshow, or just go to Sideshow.com and put in Juliet, not Julia, but Juliet Roberts. All of the information, the show links and notes, photograph of Juliet will all appear up there for you. Juliet Roberts, thank you so much for your time. It's been an absolute wonderful pleasure and a real treat to speak to you today.
Thank you. Very good to speak to you too, and I look forward to seeing you there.
Excellent stuff. Thanks, Juliet.
Thank you so much. All right. Have a good day.
Thank you, Juliet. Bye-bye. Take care.